in trenches full of mud. 'Cause war has always been the boss's way, sir. Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Interesting story on this this Patina woman, the Russian asset, the foreign agent, who, you know, look, you know, married up to the NRA and, you know, seemed to be the conduit of all of the stuff coming from Russia. Evidently, there is an expected plea agreement to be filed here very soon. Where they claim that this Maria Butina and this person number one, not to be confused with individual number one, but person number one, who they believe is a Republican activist, Paul Erickson. They believe this agreement is going to say that she conspired with the Russian government and at least one other person to act as an unregistered foreign agent. And look, you know, she, all of this stuff. I mean, we're finally starting to see, you know, the pieces fall into place. And a lot of these plea agreements of people wanting to avoid, oh, I don't know, a good portion of the rest of their lives behind bars. The rats will flee the ship and save themselves. But it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning of the program where, you know, back home, you know, I'm talking with relatives who, I don't think there's anything that could possibly happen other than Vladimir Putin coming out and saying that him and Donnie had conspired together. And even that, I don't think they would be upset with. So here to share some thoughts on, you know, how I deal with the basket of deplorables that is my family come the next holiday, I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come talk with us. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So I look at this, and, you know, I just spent the weekend back home visiting family, and it was one of these, you know, one of these moments where, you know, we're in the kitchen having these arguments over, you know, political stuff, and, you know, someone went for the knife, and, you know, it was crazy.
Oh, wow. Really?
In the defense of this administration and the defense of Donald Trump, and I'm going, how is it possible you cannot see reality? And it just dawned on me at that moment where I go, is there any way, is there anything that could possibly grab these, get these people to, you know, to shake out of this trance, out of this hypnosis? I don't even know what to call it.
No, there's nothing. You knew I was going to say that, though.
So there's no hope.
I mean, again, you know, it's like we've talked about before with the example I used from psychology and psychiatry, delusional disorder, in that when an individual has a very fixed, firm belief, in particular, if it's something that's non-bizarre, you know, that is sort of mundane, that is something that they see on the news, that they hear other people repeating, that they see on social media, so that it seems normalized and appropriate, it's very difficult for those individuals to be, you know, swayed with facts that contradict that belief system that they're holding so tightly to, which is why, you know, in the clinical realm, there really isn't anything you can do. I mean, as long as the person isn't, you know, acting on that delusion to the extent that they're trying to harm themselves or other people, we sort of just go, hey, there's not really much we can do about that. Now, in the example of, you know, with your family, I'm hearing this about a knife being brought out. I'm pretty concerned about that aspect.
No, we're in the kitchen. And I mean, there was cutlery around. I mean, this wasn't
okay.
You know, it had gotten that heated to where, you know, it was one of those things where you just go, you know.
Right.
It could have gotten bloody.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but I mean, I think that these people who believe in the narrative that is spun on the right wing, they have been indoctrinated into that belief system for going on like 30 years. If you think about Fox News, you think about Rush Limbaugh and all of the talking heads on AM radio, and now there's Sinclair that's doing the same thing, but even worse, actually. So I think there's enough of this floating around in the media that these people consume that they are unable to see outside of that, and they have no insight into the fact that it's mostly hogwash.
Yeah, I mean, my uncle, who we were at his house, and you know, he's a very wealthy guy. I mean, he's a very successful business person. Mm-hmm. Outwardly seems relatively intelligent until you get talking about Hillary and the fixation on Hillary and the emails and Hillary and Benghazi. In fact, he told me while we were having this conversation that he had offered this judicial watch group, and ALJS or JC, I think it's called. He said he had offered them $100,000 to hire Trey Gowdy at this judicial watch. And I'm going, and you could easily afford that, but think about how many children you could feed with that. But just your fixation on Hillary and the emails, do you not get she's not president?
Wow.
And it's just this bizarre disconnect where you go, how is it possible you're still fixated on this 2 years after, and yet, well, everything else, not so important.
Well, and as you're saying that, I'm thinking about how James Comey just came out of that meeting he had with the congressional Republicans and saying that most of what they asked him about was in regards to Hillary Clinton's emails. So this is a collective Hillary Clinton derangement syndrome that we have. I mean, I think in a lot of ways they are more infatuated with her and obsessed with her than they were with even Obama. I mean, they've taken it to a whole nother level, and I think that really speaks to just the power that she held and the potential that she had to really change things in a way that, you could never go back after that, right? I mean, obviously this would be the first female president, but I think that this is a decades-long hatred of this woman to the point where these people can never let it go. They always want to find something that actually confirms and affirms all of the reasons they've hated her, because the truth is they really don't have anything. They really don't have any, like, tangible thing they can sink their teeth in and say, hey, yeah, this is what she did.
She killed her friend, Jane. And look, the Benghazi thing came up, and she killed her friend. She sent him in there to get Stinger missiles back. We know it. And I'm going, do the Republicans have anything in this? I mean, if you remember Sequester and all of the funding cuts, does that play into it at all? And they're like, no, they lied. And it just comes back to this. You do realize the Benghazi hearings were the longest hearings in the history of this country, longer than 9/11, longer than JFK. They were the longest congressional hearings in history. And they found bupkis. They found nothing. It was a horrible tragedy. Nobody wants to see anyone killed. But to say there was some nefarious plot to kill this guy off just shows that there's some limited activity between the ears.
Yeah, but again, it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter that there are no facts to back up the claim. It doesn't matter that there was this very long investigation, or that Hillary Clinton sat there for 11 hours and, answered questions about it. None of that matters to them. What matters to them is that they don't like this woman, and they want to have a quote-unquote good reason for it, and so that they don't look ridiculous. And so they continue to keep trying to dig and dig and dig. Well, there must have been something in her emails. There's got to be something that proves that all this time, that all this hatred we've had for her has been righteous and justified. And I think even the larger point, when you think about the Republican Party, I was just having this conversation on Twitter today. Even when you think about, the 2016 election, and obviously all of this stuff is coming to light about, the steps that were taken to, prevent her from winning that election. But if you even go back, think about Citizens United. I mean, that whole case was based on, trying to do everything they could to beat Hillary Clinton when they thought that she was going to be the nominee in 2008. So this is an ongoing trend with these people that they really don't like her, and they don't like what she stands for, and they don't like the people she represents.
Is
and they're never going to let that go.
Is it her, or would it be any woman?
I think it's her specifically. I think that there is something about her, if you go back to, you know, when she was first lady, and the fact that she did not treat that role the way that they expected her to treat that role. They didn't like the fact that she went in there and actually wanted to help, you know, craft policy, and that she actually had ideas on health care, and ideas on health care that really were way better than anything the Republicans had come up with to that point. And I think they were intimidated by that. But I think, you know, beyond that, it also has a lot to do with her constituencies and the people, the marginalized groups that she has advocated for her entire time in public life. They don't like those groups, and they don't like that she's chosen to align herself with those marginalized people.
Yeah, I often think back to 93 and all of the Hillary Care attacks that went on. And I go, you know, how much further along would we be as a country if we would have gotten something out of that instead of, you know, just gridlock and anger and hatred. And, mm-hmm. and of course, you know, the Heritage Foundation's Romney Care, which eventually turned into the ACA. You know, mm-hmm. how much further would we be ahead?
Right, exactly. But this was all because they couldn't tolerate listening to a woman's point of view, in particular, you know, in regards to an issue that in a lot of ways, your average woman has just had more exposure to the healthcare system than your average man has, just based on, you know, our healthcare needs in life. And so to withhold that opportunity from her to be active and be present in that process, I think was partly about the policy itself, but also just had a lot to do with the fact that they really hadn't seen a first lady behave in that way. And, you know, they hadn't really contended with a first lady who was as competent and educated enough to actually participate meaningfully.
Yeah, well, it's just, again, it's one of those moments where you go, you know, this fixation on her, you know, unhealthy. It's unhealthy. It really just unhealthy. I wanted to get your thoughts on the, evidently the a couple of Republicans have thrown out this letter. I don't know if you've seen the Dear Colleague letter from Representative Elise Stefanik, the Republican from New York, and a couple others, calling for an autopsy on what went wrong in 2018. And my thought is, this shouldn't be all that hard. I mean, you could have just dusted off the one that you didn't listen to in 2012, same kind of thing, and then added how freaking crazy Trump has been these last 2 years.
I haven't heard about this. How did I miss this?
Yeah, evidently, you know, she sent a letter, you know, saying that we need, quote, an honest, which I had to chuckle at, transparent assessment of the structural operations and decision-making process that led our party losing an historic number of seats. We fell short across multiple demographics, including women, who represent a growing segment of America's voting population. No, they're actually the majority, but thanks for getting that wrong, too. Minimizing or ignoring the root causes behind these historic losses will lead us to repeat them, in which I'm actually hoping that to happen. They finish off with, we urge your support for the National Republican Congressional Committee to officially assess the reasons behind our party's historic losses and to develop recommendations for implementation moving forward. How about not being horrible? Like, start there. How about, you know, how about not gassing children in our name? You know, how about not going to a climate change, you know, meeting of hundreds of 200 countries around the world in Poland and saying we need more coal? How about things like that?
Well, I don't think they'll ever understand that aspect, but I think the lowest hanging fruit is stop being so loyal to Trump.
Yeah, they can't not.
Yeah, like, for them to seriously, and I know they have to do that, like, just to look like they're taking it seriously that they lost and that they're actually being proactive about not losing again. And maybe this is they can't say these things out loud, which is why all of these anonymous Republicans are now, you know, speaking to the Washington Post under their breath and saying that, oh, we're worried that Trump isn't going to, you know, finish his term. I've been ranting about this for the last couple of days on Twitter. But, you know, the Republican Party is between a rock and a hard place because it is unable to explicitly admit that Trump is an albatross around its neck. There's too many of them that are still trying to pretend that this is a successful presidency and that he's doing everything right and there's nothing to see here. And, you know, this is just a witch hunt with the investigation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that they can't actually begin to stop the bleeding and fix the problem because they won't actually identify what the actual problem is. So she can, you know, come up with this letter and they can try to do an autopsy all they want to do. But Trump is there live and in living color every single day, failing and being a huge embarrassment and incompetent and criminal in a lot of ways every single day.
No, I'm with you. But my first thought was to mail her a mirror. You want to know what the problem is? Here you go. Take a look. Long, hard look. And then, of course, you know, Trump's Twitter feed.
But I think this is also a consequence of the gerrymandering that's happened, and also, again, like we were talking about earlier, the echo chamber on the right wing. Because what happens with a lot of these Republicans is that they're segregated in districts that look just like them, think just like them, talk just like them. And so, you know, they aren't getting very many phone calls from, you know, people with opposing views telling them how they feel about, you know, whatever their policy is at the moment. And then, you know, they are watching Fox News and they're hearing all of this stuff on TV. They're seeing Trump. They are saying all of these things. And so, again, there's a confirmation bias where they really don't, none of this other information coming in from the outside about how terrible they are actually is getting through. So this is why they're still, you know, sitting there with their hands up like we don't know what's going on, because they won't listen to anyone that is outside of their own little cult that they have going.
I mean, is it possible they don't realize? I mean, is that really possible that they can't, you know, assess the fact that Trump is, you know, taking them down? Look, I have friends who are members of Congress.
Yes, what your family was showing you over the weekend.
Yeah, but, you know, look, I have friends who are members of Congress, and they say, you know, in the cloakroom, there's a lot of kibitzing going. There's a lot of unhappy Republicans, and their disdain, their anger pointed at Trump because so far, really train wreck. I mean, outside of, you know, doing the deregulation stuff, which they're all on board with, and the huge tax cuts that funded their donor base, everything else has been kind of a train wreck.
Yeah, it has been. But I think that, you know, one of the first rules in politics is sort of to not look like there's no unity in your party. And that's something that the Republicans have always done very well. You know, they keep all of this. When there is dissension, they keep it really close to the vest and they whisper it to each other. And, you know, maybe they'll go and they'll say a few words to reporters to get a story out there, but they always do it anonymously so that you can't really pinpoint who it was that said it. And all they do is just say, oh, well, I think he's great. I think he's, you know, doing a great job. He's making America great again. And then they just move on. Because they are taught to be in lockstep. And so I think that's really going to be a problem going forward because he's done, you know, things that he's under criminal investigation for. And they're going to really have to decide if they're for rule of law or if they're not. And if they want to actually come out publicly and say that they're okay with crime and the commission of crime, or that they don't agree that these things are even crimes at all. And, you know, to this point, the people who vote for them are just letting them get away with that and will believe whatever they say and go along with whatever miscarriage of democracy and justice just to stay in lockstep with the party and look unified.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, especially as Mueller keeps coming out with stuff. And, you know, in the last hour, you know, I talked with Bob Ney, who said, you know, who pointed out that Jerry Nadler was on, you know, I think it was, you know, Meet the Depressed or one of the talking head shows. I forget which one. But he said that, you know, this president has committed impeachable offenses. It's just whether we're willing to go all in on it and pursue impeachment. And that's an interesting point because, you know, the Democrats, you know, they've got an agenda they want to push. You know, is that going to be the focus of the next 2 years? Or do they start looking at, hey, you know, I need to, you know, let's talk about how we turn this country around post-Trump?
Yeah, and I think this is one of those situations where the media really plays a big role, because typically what happens, and, you know, what we saw happen with the GWB administration, is that as soon as the Democrats got in there, no matter how much they talked about the incompetence and the negligence and the lead up to the Iraq war and how bad Katrina was, you know, once the Democrats got in, they had completely lost, if they ever had, any appetite for holding any of these people accountable for the things that happened on their watch. And so I think, you know, yes, there's all this talk about, you know, holding Trump accountable, but what you are going to see happen inevitably is that when the Democrats take control, the narrative in the mainstream media is going to change so that they are constantly making the Democrats look bad for trying to hold Trump or the GOP accountable for anything they've done over the last 2 years. The media is going to be set up to make Democrats look petty and to make it look like they are distracted and that they should be doing something else more important than holding these people accountable. That's just how our media plays it every single time.
Yeah, I mean, look, I go back to, you know, 2009 when Obama took office, and one of my big, I have a number of problems with the Obama presidency. You know, obviously the No Employee Free Choice Act, but the biggest one being no perp walks. I mean, all the people who crashed our economy, they walked away scot-free. And look, the administration and had other problems, had other priorities, obviously so. But I would have liked to have seen a lot of Wall Street criminals perp walked into court and then given nice shiny bracelets on their way to the Gray Bar Hotel.
Right, but where was the will for that? Where was the political will to do that? You didn't see people out continuing to say, we want Democrats in office and we want Democrats to be doing this particular thing.
Yeah, but we were, but
we
I think most of us were, I think most of us were struggling to make sure we didn't lose our house and
hoping
we didn't lose our jobs.
Exactly. And that's the peril that happens with the GOP, because when they get into office, they do all of this corrupt stuff, they do all of this dysfunctional stuff, and then they leave a big mess, right? So that whenever the Democrats come in behind them, the priority becomes cleaning up the mess, right, and fixing the recession or fixing whatever crisis has befallen the country. And then you really do look petty for going back and doing a blame game and naming and shaming the people that caused the problem in the first place. And so I think that is unfortunately the burden that the Democratic Party always carries when they take back control of the government after the Republicans have screwed everything up, is that they really do have to decide, how much are we going to do to just do policy and start fixing some of this stuff, and how much are we going to do to hold people accountable? Now, the problem, too, that's going to be there for the Democrats is that they're still going to have Trump there. And this is not somebody who is really capable of working with them in a functional way. So the expectation that they're going to be able to get things through, also get the Senate to pass it, also get Trump to sign it in the midst of this investigation and whatever other corrupt things they're trying to do, that's also a tall order. So I don't think that, you know, the circumstances will be the same as they were in 2006. I think it's going to be a whole new ball game.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And at the best I can hope for is gridlock. And what does that say about, you know, about our political discourse? What does it say about our ability to engage in this wonderful experiment of self-governance where the best we can hope for is nothing?
Yeah, I mean, but again, I have to just go back to the media, and I have to go back to public opinion, because, you know, public opinion typically is on the side of doing a lot of the policy things that we want the Democratic Party to be doing.
Right.
But I think that what we have to do is we have to hold our media accountable And we have to actually go out and make the story and be vocal and be in the streets and make it clear what we actually want from our government so that the narrative doesn't change to trying to persuade our legislative representatives to actually do something that is not actually what the American people want.
Yeah, good point. Last question I've got for you. Chief of Staff, Kelly out at the end of the month. the guy, the golden child that Trump wanted and, you know, was his only choice, turned him down at the altar. Mark Meadows is, I guess, supposedly the front runner, maybe. Do you see anybody taking this, and who in their right mind would want it?
I think they should just give up. I mean, how many presidents have had this many chiefs of staff by now? What's the record on that? I'm going to have to Google that.
We got to figure that one out.
The turnover is way too high. Whoever attempts to do it is basically attempting to herd cats. It's a thankless job. It's going to be a disaster no matter who they put in there.
Yeah, I wouldn't want, and at the end of it, he's going to turn on you.
Of course he's going to turn on you, and this man is, you know, he's more disgruntled by the day. So the expectation that you're going to be able to go in there and either soothe him or stop him from making disastrous decisions or somehow build some better relationship between him and Congress is just, it's not going to happen.
It's never going to happen.
Especially
when you look at the reality that Democrats are going to investigate things. There's going to be there's going to be a lot of demands that this administration. Can you just imagine, even if the chief of staff did nothing but listen to Trump all day, complain and whine and have throw temper tantrums, who would want that job?
Nobody. Nobody wants that job. Even the people who have taken that job didn't really want that job.
Well, I guess there is that.
I mean, the whole time John Kelly was there, all the stories were always about how he just couldn't wait to get the heck out of there. And he's finally gone. And Priebus didn't last very long either. I mean, if he actually were to make it to 2020, which I sincerely hope does not happen, he probably could have two more chiefs of staff by then.
I think that'd be a good thing. Because I'll tell you, this is where we disagree, and I rarely disagree with you because you're obviously the smart one here. I don't want to see him impeached. I just don't. I fear Mike Pence that much.
Well, I mean, I don't know what is going to happen from one day to the next.
None of us do.
I don't even know if we can even say we hope none of this is going to happen, right? Because you just don't know what he's going to do.
That's true.
And you don't know what crimes he may have committed to this point either.
You're absolutely right. You don't know what a cornered rat is going to do.
Exactly.
And we will see it. Hopefully you'll be here to share it with us.
Yeah, I will, for sure.
Always great talking with you, Jane. I appreciate it.
You too. Have a great week.
Our good friend, Propane Jane. Check her out on Twitter. One of the most colorful commentators on Twitter. Oh, and a good friend of the program. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. This is why we fight, why we lie away. This is why we fight. Finally, radio for the rest of us. Rick Smith.